This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Callum McSwiggan on FUBAR Radio.
There is a wall in my life built by you. You opened a door that a kid shouldn't walk through. Oh, but I'm not bitter, I'm just tired. No use getting angry at the way that you're wired. Ignorant trauma in one afternoon. And I could never let you know. You'd never get it. And now I'm the one who can't let go. Don't say it's genetic, is it real? You believe you're guiltless, so I can tell. You believe you're guiltless, but I don't think I'd feel better if I opened your eyes. I'll carry a button till the day that you die. Is it real? You believe you're guiltless. I'll never know why you favor the tone. No one shred of hope, so I built up my own. Oh, but I'm not bitter, I'm just tired. No use getting angry at the way that you're wired. A dark politician will end up alone. And I could never let you know. Never get it. And now I'm the one who can't let go. Don't say it's genetic. Is it real? You believe you're guiltless, so I can tell. You believe you're guiltless, but I don't think I'd feel better if I opened your eyes. I'll carry your button till the day that you die.
Hello and welcome back to the Callum McSwiggan Show. Today I am going to be joined by the absolutely stunning Sarah Malindois. She is a sex education nurse and she is from E4's show The Sex Clinic. She's not actually here with me just yet. She's just running. She's just sprinting in. So I'm going to play you a little bit more music and then hopefully we'll be joined by the lovely Sarah after that.
Cause I know I said a lot of things that do me crazy.
I'm joined by the lovely Sarah. You're here.
I'm here.
I'm so, so glad you're here. I was worried that you weren't going to make it.
Do you know, I was stuck on the tube and I was like, I bet they think I've stood them up. And I was like, I did radio for 4 years. I should know a lot better than this. I'll slap myself on the wrist. Don't worry.
It happens. It happens to the best of us. Let's talk about you, because you had a show, The Sex Clinic, right, earlier this year in January. And I feel like there's been a lot of attention around that show. I think I don't think controversy is the right word, but I think a lot of people have taken an interest in it because of some of the things that happened on that show.
But
there are some things I want to talk about in specific. But before we do that, do you want to tell me a little bit about the show and how you got involved?
Yeah, so The Sex Clinic is a show basically designed to destigmatize and remove the taboo around talking about sex, relationship and sexual health. We've seen, in the last, say, 5 to 10 years in the UK, a massive increase in STIs being diagnosed. According to Public Health England, every 4 minutes we're diagnosing an STI. We've completely changed the way in which we view sex and relationships and how people meet each other. And there's a lot more accessibility, people having a lot more sex, a lot more sexual partners. And whether people agree with that or not is irrelevant. That's just what's happening.
Yeah.
And the needs of our generation have changed. And there was a massive gap in the market that was targeting this very obvious, problem, I'd say, that we're facing in the UK. I guess you could call it an epidemic, in that we are seeing a lot more of an increase in STIs, and also things like government cuts, which affects, our accessibility to services. So a show like this to talk about all these issues that young people, not just young people, but even older people are facing. But because sex is something that's not easily spoken about, it's taken a while, and this show has been like a massive eye-opener to people. So I got involved with the show really by coincidence. I happen to be a qualified nurse. I work in media as well and fashion, and a friend of mine who works in TV knew about the show and put me in touch with one of the casting directors and said, oh, Sarah's a sexual health nurse, as well as a radio presenter and all this other stuff, she might be cool to get involved with it. And so after a long process, a couple of years, it all happened, and then finally, we launched an E4 this year.
It's really, really amazing. And what you were saying there, excuse me, what you were saying there about, the increase in STIs, etc. And, people being afraid to talk about sex. It is an enormous issue.
Yeah.
And I think it's, to me, it always surprises me, because I think in my circles, everybody's happy to talk about sex.
Yeah.
And I say things on this radio show that I probably should keep to myself, but I think there is a real issue. And sometimes, I do come across perhaps a stranger, and sometimes because I get so used to being so open about sex, I'll say something and suddenly they'll be very kind of closed off about it. Why do you think that is?
I completely agree with you, what you just said. When you're somebody who's used to kind of talking about sex relationships as part of your job, which, being a nurse, you master the art of having really super awkward conversations.
Yes. Yeah.
And so for me, talking about periods and like PMS and like fisting and all anal, like all these kind of things, for me it's normal. I do it for a job. I hear these stories all the time. I've heard them for years. So for us it's normal. But I think that with the show, because people just don't talk about it, especially in the way that it was done, we show people's bits, we show the full examination. So it's not like, oh, we literally it's warts and all, quite literally.
Yeah.
So I just think, I don't know what it is. I just think it's generational, and sex is a private thing. Not everybody has to speak about it. It's
a
very personal thing. But I think it should be an option you should be able to talk about it if you choose to do so. And if you've got, I see patients who come in after having symptoms for weeks, days, and the only thing that stopped them is the fear of, even bumping into somebody that they know in a sexual health clinic, where I work is very central. So you're quite likely to bump into people.
I always bump into my exes.
Do you?
Every single time I walk in, I'll clock them. But it's not a bad thing. There's nothing wrong with being there. There's no shame. There's no stigma. You should, if anything, you should be proud to be there, because you're taking care of your body.
That's what I always say to patients. And they're like, oh God, thank God you called me in quickly, because I was in the waiting room. I was so nervous. And I'm like, well, it shows that you're responsible, because, you know, everybody has sex, you know, not everybody, but, you know, it's as normal as breathing, isn't it? That's how we all got here at the end of the day. So you being here just means that you're taking your health seriously. And that's what the show's about, is just to normalise and say, look, go and get yourself tested. It's better than what could happen if you don't.
Yeah, absolutely. But the one thing I do want to say, though, is that I think it's actually, and I don't think these people get enough praise and celebration. The people who go on the show themselves to talk about their bodies, to talk about the issues that they're going through, that is actually such an admirable thing.
Oh,
and I think
sure.
there's these people are often mocked and things online, which I don't think is very fair, because I think to put yourself out like there like that and say, hey, I've got this problem and I'm going to talk about it, but I'm not just going to talk about it to a nurse.
Yeah.
Talk about it to the nation.
The nation, because who knows who else is watching and thinking, oh, God, I had that. I think I've got that symptom. And that's a great thing about the show, is it's not just about, oh, so-and-so has come for a screen. It's also the stories that they come in with and how they've come to the clinic and why. And it could be something really straightforward, like, okay, I've got a new boyfriend or girlfriend. We've been having sex, but we want to stop using protection. So we've come for a normal sexual health screen, and that's fine. So it could be that. It could be somebody who's come in who's been sexually assaulted. It could be somebody who doesn't speak English and hasn't accessed services in a long time. It could be somebody who's just come in on the lunch break just for a normal MOT. So everybody's different. Everyone has different stories. And the great thing about the people that come on the show is they are willing to talk about it. And I remember a few people were like, oh, are they real patients or are they actresses? Are they this? And I was like, well, if you're having sex and you're willing to talk about it, everybody's a patient. It could be the Prime Minister, it could be you, it could be your mum, anybody who's like, look, I'm willing to come and tell my story, absolutely is not, you know, everybody's a patient. And I think that's the takeaway message. So yeah, well done to the people that do come and make the show.
Yeah, and you know, there will be somebody watching who has probably the exact same issue.
For sure.
And that might be the thing that they need to know, either how to treat it or to go and seek help.
Right, and I guess that's the reason why the show's been a hit. It's not been a hit for no reason. Obviously, clearly a lot of people are interested or intrigued, or for whatever reason, people want to know a bit more. So that alone speaks volumes.
Because you might tune in and be like, oh, this will be a bit of fun. Like, let's watch some people get their bits out. And then next minute, you're like, oh, okay, that's answered that question that I needed an answer to.
Right, yeah.
And I mean, I guess that's what we try to do here on this show as well. You know, we talk about sex and we have fun and we do sex confessions and talk about porn and everything. But, you know, at the same time, we're trying to educate. And I think it's important to get that message out there.
Yeah. And I think that's what I love most about the sex clinic, because it's not just, OK, this is chlamydia, this is gonorrhea, this is, this, you know, it's kind of like the stories, the characters. Like, it's so funny. Some of the people that come through, and the waiting room banter for me is my favorite part of the show, when they're all talking with each other. And when we're filming, we don't get to see that part. So when I was watching the series with everyone else, like, I really got to enjoy it just as a viewer, and for me that was my best part.
Let's talk about one story in particular. This is one that's had a lot of conversation online. I think you probably know which one I'm going to be talking about. You've probably been asked about this a million times. The unwashed penis. I actually didn't see this myself.
Did you not?
But I've been told about it by about 500 friends.
Yeah.
any dinner party I've been to recently, people have brought it up. It's not the best dinner party conversation.
Oh, you can imagine me when I have to answer the questions. Yeah.
So tell me about what happened.
God, so we had a young guy, very sweet, very lovely. Now, he came in initially. So what happens, they come in and you get just like in real life clinics. So you get a brief overview, their name, how old they are, you know, a brief story of kind of what was brought them in. And his story was like, he thinks that his penis was growing. So I thought, okay, fine. So I'm looking, I'm like, all right, 24. So before I've even seen or spoken, I'm like, well, that's definitely not the case. So I was like, okay. So I called him in. He was like, yeah, you know, my girlfriend thinks it's getting, you know, people think, said it's getting bigger. And I think, you know, so I was like, okay. And then, long story short, I won't say the whole thing, because I want people to actually go and watch it for themselves.
Sure.
But long story short, we did the examination, and it just so happens that he wasn't retracting his foreskin properly and wasn't washing underneath properly. So some things grew, and So it turns out it wasn't an STI. He just wasn't
cleaning.
He wasn't cleaning thoroughly the way, you know, you're supposed to.
So when I first heard about this, I had this moment of going, I literally went, wait, hang on a minute. I was like, Do I pull my foreskin back when I shower? And I was like, I don't think I do, but I don't have a hygiene issue.
Right.
And then and my friends were like, no, you must do. And I was like, I don't think I do. I was like, I can't remember ever pulling back my foreskin to watch. I was like, I don't think I do this.
Right.
And then the next time I was in the shower, did it automatically without thinking. I was like, oh my God, I do. I do.
Brilliant. There you go. See, not everyone. It's not obvious for everybody.
But that's the thing, isn't it? It's not obvious. Like something like that seems so natural to me that I don't even think about it.
Right.
But, you know, if somebody's... I'm sure my parents probably taught me that when I was very, very young.
Yeah.
So it was kind of instilled in me. But if you're never given that piece of information, no matter how obvious it might seem, we just don't know. You know, we hear stories about, you know, people using condoms completely wrong or doing all of these things with sex because nobody's ever said that,
that's not how
you do it. Yeah. This is how you do it.
Right. And even in real life clinic, we hear so many different, you know, questions and queries about stuff that you might think, oh, okay, well, that's a given, isn't it? But no. And unless, like you said, unless somebody tells you or, you know, takes the time. And also, I guess it's a reflection on how, you know, how our school education system could do with a lot better sex ed. And I think that's a big issue. I think if we started earlier and normalising these conversations for young people, especially when they're growing up in secondary school and that kind of thing, by the time they do reach adult life and stuff, then it removes that stigma of going to the clinic. And because when I was in school, I never knew like what to do in a situation if I had any symptoms or you just don't have this. They'll teach you, okay, this is how children are made. This is, you know, you get a basic overview.
It's very clinical. It's very, very
and of course teachers are not trained medically, so you can't expect them to educate people on things like you know family planning things and contraception and things. So there is a lot that I think there's ways in which school system and the medical system can sort of work together better to provide better education, sex education.
Absolutely. And it's so amazing, you know, everything that you're doing.
Yeah.
Do we have any exciting projects coming up? Can we expect more from the sex clinic or can you not answer that question?
No, I think I can. No,
you can?
We can. So we've started recruiting. So we are confirmed for another series.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. So we're filming in July, mid-July. So that will be... I never know whether series 3 or series 2 because the first one was kind of like a pilot, but that was for all four. So it was online. And then we sort of launched on E4. So this is the second series on E4. And it's going to be a lot bigger. So what we want to do, we want to sort of open it up a bit more to like issues about body dysmorphia, any kind of anything to do with sex, relationships, sexual health and that kind of thing. So it's going to be a lot bigger this time round. So I'm really excited.
Amazing. Yeah. Well, if I have any, you know, sexual health related issues when you're next filming, I will be there. I'll come to the clinic.
Will you?
I will.
Callum, you are absolutely welcome. We would love to have you. I'm going to hold you to that.
I mean, I'm hoping I, you know, stick with a clean bill of health.
Yeah.
But, you know, we never know what will happen between now and then.
So
let's see. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Pleasure to be here.
We're going to be playing some games and things very, very shortly.
Fun.
But before we do that, let's have a little bit of music. This is Nightmare.
Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I shall die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take.
I've tasted blood and it is sweet. I've had the rug pulled beneath my feet. I've trusted lies and trusted men. Broke down and put myself back together again. Stared in a mirror and punched it to shatters. Collected the pieces and picked out a dagger. I've pinched my skin in between my two fingers and wished I could cut some parts off with some scissors. Come on, little lady, give us a smile. No, I ain't got nothing to smile about. I got no one to smile for. I waited a while for a moment to say I don't owe you. But I'm no sweet dream, but I'm a hell of a night. No, I won't smile, but I'll show you my teeth. And I'ma let you speak if you just let me breathe. I've been polite, but won't be caught dead. Letting a man tell me what I should do in my bed. Keep my exes in check in my basement. Cause kindness is weakness, or worse, you're complacent. I could play nice, or I could be a bully. I'm tired and angry, but somebody should be. Come on, little lady, give us a smile. No, I ain't got nothing to smile about. I got no one to smile for. I waited a while for a moment to say I don't.
One like me can be a real nightmare, completely aware. But I'm glad to be a real nightmare, so save me your prayers.
I keep a record of the wreckage of my life. But I'm no sweet dream, but I'm a hell of a night.
So Sarah, we talked a lot about, I guess, other people talking about, you know, conditions and things that they have.
Mm.
But I know that you suffer from a specific condition that I hadn't heard about myself.
Right.
And I thought we could have a quick chat about that. I did ask Sarah in advance. I've not just thrown her under the bus and surprised her with this. It's premenstrual dysphoric disorder.
That's right, yeah.
I genuinely know nothing about this, but I'm really interested to learn.
Yeah, fine. And you're not the only one. It's very rarely, because it's quite rare compared to, you know, everyone knows about PMS, so even if you don't know the ins and out of it, you kind of know that when women are, you know, going through their menstrual cycle, they have like mood changes that are caused by their hormonal changes and things like that. So PMS is normally something that, you know, like I said before, normally about a week or two before you go through your cycle, you have sort of mood changes, even physiological changes. So you might have achy breasts, your mood would change, pain, you know, stomach pain, back pain, you know, before or during your period. So with PMDD, it's like PMS, but it's a more aggressive version. So you kind of get the normal symptoms, but they're a lot more amplified. So through doing the interview with the Mirror, the Daily Mirror that I did about PMDD, I got to learn a lot more about it as an infection, because I'd never spoken to anyone else who sort of experienced it the way I did. I only spoke to sort of my medical friends. So I did an article about it, about my experience. So what it is it's like your symptoms that you get for PMS, but they're a lot more aggressive. So a lot of women can experience, you know, severe depression, really, really bad moods, to the point where you don't want to get out of bed. You really feel, for a short space of time, and it could be anything from 2 days to 2 weeks. It's really different for different women, but you can really feel almost like you're clinically depressed or you have anxiety. So that's what I kind of used to experience until I figured it out and then got into a method of contraception that works for me, because that's how you can control it through contraception. But until you recognize it, you can think that you're going through some sort of, you know, depression, or you're suffering some sort of mental health issue, which actually PMDD is considered to some degree a mental health issue. So for me, it was a massive eye-opener just talking about it, because it was very rarely spoken about. And so when I did the article, I had a lot of women sort of coming up to me, and it also got picked up by loads of different publications, and there was a massive interest in it, which was quite interesting. But going back to how, you know, we sort of conditioned to not speak about certain things that we go through, whether it's anything sort of mental health or sex or anything to do with anything that's in your mind or your body, because there's this massive stigma, a lot of people hadn't heard about it. But when I spoke about it, women were like, this is me, I go through this, you know, with my periods, and a lot of people could resonate with it. So there was like a 40% increase in the, you know, the association that sort of deals with women who, you know, the sort of help organization for it. They saw like a 40% increase in women inquiring about it, saying that I think I'm experiencing this and I think this is what it is. But also the only way you can diagnose it is by keeping track of your emotions. So it's not like you can do a blood test or swab to say, okay, you've got
right,
it.
Yeah.
So it's very much more in your head, and you just kind of have to be mindful of how your hormones can affect you. So for me, it was, you know, it was a massive eye opener, just learning about how severe it can be. Because mine, compared to some other women, is nowhere near as severe. Some people, I think it affects about 1 in 20 women.
Yeah.
And I think about,
it's quite high, actually.
Which is quite high,
yeah.
That's a massive, that's a lot of women. And I think 10% of those women will experience, you know, suicidal thoughts things like that. And sometimes it can worsen with pregnancy and things. So yeah, so I was really happy that it got, you know, the attention that it got, and that, you know, a lot of women just, you know, came to the realization.
I'm imagining though, there would be so many women out there who are completely undiagnosed, and they think it's what they're feeling is just kind of not well, it's not that it's not normal, but you know, they might think, I feel like so many people talk about their periods, etc., and talk about mood swings, etc., that they may not realize that they're experiencing something else. Something different, and they may think, oh, this pain or this you know, mood swings or whatever it is just what I'm supposed to be feeling.
Or you think everyone else is doing it. Or sometimes you think, oh, maybe this is my personality. Maybe I'm just a moody person. And you sort of, there's a lot of self-blame. But then once you realise the pattern, you think, okay, well, this is only me for a certain period of time, and then afterwards, and then once you make that connection, then you're able to do something about it. But there are a lot of women thinking, well, this is just part and parcel of being a woman, this is what we're supposed to go through, but you don't realize that actually it's not normal,
it's a real thing.
We
had a guest a few weeks back on the show called Lucy Peach. I don't know if you've heard of her, and she talks a lot about periods, and she did an amazing TED talk about periods, and she was talking about almost like preparing herself for wherever she was in her cycle, and just being aware of it and being aware of the changes. And she was talking about, you know, being more active and getting more work done in certain times of her cycle, and then in other times just, you know, taking care of herself more. Did you find that you had to do that even more? You know, you'd be aware that you're a certain stage of your cycle was coming up, so you would, I guess, not give yourself a break, but be aware take care of yourself.
Oh yeah, and I think for me, the older I've gotten and the more I've kind of been able to, and also it's for me, it's helped reading articles online about other, you know, people going through similar things. And then once you realise, okay, it's not just me, it's not all in my head, other people experiencing, then it's easier to track it every month. So you think, okay, if I'm going through, if I'm a little bit irritable, because me, I know when I'm irritable, I'm just like, I don't want anyone to look at me, I don't want anyone to touch me, you know, so I can feel it. So then when I start feeling like that, I'm like, okay, let me just give myself a day off. Let me maybe move that meeting. Maybe let me just stay at home. Let me just chill. Let me just watch Friends all day in my pajamas. Sometimes that's all you need to do. And then you kind of override it, and then you get back to it. But I think it's giving yourself that time. That's why I always say to women, if you know that you're just not in the mood for something, you know, sometimes you can ride through, and sometimes you're not in a position to just cancel things, especially in the job that I do. I can't just say, oh, today I'm just not up for it, you know. But it's just still finding those times to just have a word with yourself and say, right, when I get home, I'm gonna have a nice shower, I'm just gonna have a tea. But then when I realize that, okay, this is because of that, it makes it a lot easier, and then I'm less irritable because I'm like, okay, this is why, and then I'm mindful.
It's so interesting to learn about this. My favorite thing about this show is when guests come on and teach me something, and I've learned something new today. So thank you for that.
No problem.
We're going to play a game now. This is a game about sex toys.
Right.
It's a brand new game. We've only played it once before.
Oh, okay, fine.
As I'm sure you're aware, there's a lot of sex toys out there in the world, there's some very extravagant, over the top sex toys, and they all have absurd, ridiculous names. So in this game, I have the names of five sex toys in front of me.
Right.
And together we're going to have to try and figure out whether or not these are real or not. I'm looking on the list, and I actually already own one of these. So I know the answer to that.
Brilliant.
One.
Brilliant. Okay,
so
fine.
I'll try
so you
not
can't
to
include that
away.
In the five, then. That's not fair.
Do we have another one? Do we have another one? Maybe. Okay, let's jump in. So the first one is the Satisfyer Pro Penguin.
Oh, wow. Oh, Penguin, you threw me. Oh, poor Penguin.
I've seen a lot of...
Is this legal?
There's like... I've seen all kinds of... They do like whale penises and things now, which fascinates me.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want that personally.
No.
But I guess people get their
to
fill
each their own,
in whatever
right?
way, you know.
I'll have the penguin. Pointing to the shelf,
I'm imagining like a cute little penguin, but I'm thinking it's probably either something that's inserted.
Yeah, so I'm trying to think the way a penguin's shaped, it could be like...
Could be like a fleshlight, I was going to say, like that opens up. Take off his head.
Maybe the wings do something.
Oh, that's a good shout.
Once it's inserted, maybe the wings then do something.
Because maybe it's a kind of like, you know, the rabbit with the little ears.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
There's a beak. Or wings.
There is a beat, so...
You know?
I think that could be...
Maybe. I'm actually thinking this one isn't real, if I'm honest.
I'm thinking it could be, because I've heard some crazy things in clinic. I'm not going to lie. So a penguin uses sex toys is probably the one of the least surprising things I've heard being inserted.
Satisfyer Pro Penguin.
Satisfyer Pro Penguin.
I'm still saying I don't think it's real.
I'm going to go for yes, only because I've heard so many wild things that why not throw a penguin in there?
Okay, should we go up against each other?
Yeah.
Let's turn this into a competition.
I want to.
All right, I'm saying it's false, and Sarah saying that this is real. Satisfyer Pro Penguin. And it is in fact real. Well done.
Yay.
I've got a little bit of information about it here. A true pleasure penguin, this cleverly designed petite external stimulator is powered by pressure wave suction. We've got a picture, but they're not loading.
Oh, they're not loading.
Oh, good.
And I just also want to go on record just to say I do not own one of these. This was an educated guess.
Yes, it's a little bit suspicious how much you knew about this one.
I was very confident with my answer, wasn't
you
I?
Were. You really were. Please get the pictures to load because I really want to see this.
I really want to see this. Yeah.
All right, our next one, Pussy Pro Prowler.
I think that's true.
Do you?
I don't know. Not because it just sounds. It sounds like it would be true.
See, I'm already leaning for false on this one because
really?
I think it's too obvious.
Yeah, maybe that's why. Yeah, that's why I went with the true.
Like I could easily see Pussy Pro Prowler on the shelf.
Same.
You know, so maybe it's a little bit of a red herring for that. Oh, we got a picture of the penguin.
Oh, we have got,
a picture of the penguin. So it looks like a penguin.
It does look like a penguin. It's got a pink bow tie.
And it's got a little hole, I guess, where the mouth would be.
Yeah, and then the head is sort of, and then the neck goes in, and then the body. So it kind of does look like a real life.
So I'm a little confused how you would use this. Is this a little hole at the top or for a clitoris?
I assume so. And maybe it's got a vibe. You know.
Maybe. I feel like I need one in my hand.
Can you really?
Who makes this? Can we have one gifted to the station? I want one. I want to play with one. I love the little bow tie.
Test drive.
The bow tie is a nice touch. Back to the Pussy Pro Prowler.
Mm-hmm.
It just could be any vibrator, couldn't it?
Yeah,
it's very generic.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking is true because it's. Yeah, it's very easy. I'm just like, yeah.
Okay, so you're going for true.
I'm going for true.
I'm going for false again.
Okay, fine.
So answers, please. The Pussy Pro Prowler. Is it real or not?
Oh,
it is not real.
Oh, fine. So damn, we're even now.
1-0. Okay, 1-0. All right, the third one. Again, I feel the same about this. Orgasmatron 3000.
Oh, wow.
Sounds
very powerful.
They're good at marketing, these sex toy people. They really put a lot of thought into it.
3,000, jeez, I'm going to go for false.
You're going for what? Sorry, you think it's false?
Yeah. Because I'm thinking, reason being, what's the 3,000? Is that like...
Well, they just put numbers on things to make it sound...
To make it sound like you're getting like 3,000 worth
of... Yeah,
sounds
amazing.
Like, yeah,
but
true.
Like, they just put any old numbers on it. I don't know, something tells me this is true. Like, I feel like I might have played with this before. Like, not at home, but like in the shop. I love going into the sex shop.
Do you?
And just,
I find
so
it interesting.
Much. There's so much
there's
there.
There's a lot. There's a lot. I'm like... Some of them have two floors. And I'm like, Jesus, wow.
It's a lot of stuff. And there's just, it's when people say things, you know, like, oh, I don't know what to do in the bedroom other than, you know, maybe like missionary sex. It's like, just go into the sex shop and look.
Yeah, look and talk to the people that work there because they're trained to let you know. Yeah, fine. And what I'd also say, especially with sexual health, I think when you go to things like a sex shop or like a sexual health clinic, Your first fear is that, the person I see is going to judge me. But we have to remember is that anyone that you see in that capacity has chosen to work in that field for a reason.
Yeah,
so if they were prude or if they were judgmental, you wouldn't work in sexual health. You wouldn't work in a sex shop if you were like, I'm not sure about that. So whenever you go to a sex shop or sexual health, whatever, always remember whoever you're seeing is trained to...
They are not judging. Capacity.
They've heard it all, seen it all. So yeah, go to the sex shop rather. And yeah, if you have any problems with you need some tips, those are the people to really actually give you the right tips.
I actually met a guy in a sex store once.
Did you? There you go.
He was working on the counter and he was really, really lovely. And we just got chatting about my purchases and then we went on a date. So, you know. So.
If that doesn't break the ice.
Yeah, straight in at the deep end.
Yeah.
All right, our next one is Pinch Me Please. Ugh.
Oh.
Yeah. Did we not give an answer? Did we not do the last one?
Oh, no, we didn't, did we?
Oh, sorry, we got
the 3,000.
Distracted.
Yeah, sorry, that was my fault. I went offline. Yes, we didn't get there. So I said false, and I think you said true.
Yes, I said true. You said false.
Right.
Okay, Orgasmatron 3,000. It is true.
So you're on
it
the lead. True. Right, okay, I need to pull my socks up now.
This is a leather-clad washing machine and saddle, which aims to bring the fun back to housework. And the instructions are here. After turning the dial to the required setting, press the on button and climb into the saddle with your legs at the front of the machine.
Ah, that would explain
wow.
the 3,000 bit then. That's speed
the 3,000.
Yeah.
Oh, that is incredible.
Oh my God.
Like, I've heard about people sitting on top of washing machines before.
I've heard of that, but I didn't realise you could now add another element to the whole washing machine experience. Wow.
Oh my God. Can we get one of these in? So I know it's quite yeah. big, but can we get one of these in the studio as well? Let's just get loads of sex toys in here. Right, okay, let's move on to the pinch me please. Ugh. I think it's like a good feeling.
Oh, fine, okay.
Pinch me please. What do you think?
Well, I need to think about my answers now. I'm now
You're behind.
I am behind.
I never win. When I go
See,
up
I never win.
My
I'm
guess.
Used to losing, but now I'm like, okay, I want to win. Right.
This could be about, like, the pinch me, please. It could be literal.
Yeah.
Like, this is like some kind
Something,
of bondage
That's
toy.
What I'm thinking, a bondage.
Or it could just be, you know, this feels so amazing. Like, oh, pinch me, please. Like,
it's
am I dreaming?
The last bit at the end. The name of the bit at the end. The bit.
I've got it written down here for you. The fourth one there.
Okay, fine.
Don't look at the rest of the running order.
No, so I'm going to cheat, I promise.
No cheating.
One. Right,
got it.
Oh, God, okay. I'm going to go for true because I think it could be some form of, like, dominatrix thing that you like.
Yeah.
I'm thinking something for the nipples or something
yes,
of that
I
nature.
Yes, I think so too.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to agree.
Yeah, I think that, yeah.
We're in agreement on this.
Yeah.
We think the pinch me, please, ugh. It's real. We think this one's true.
Oh
it's not
man.
Real.
Damn.
Oh, you really tricked me by going specific on that one. Okay, we've got one more.
Right, fine.
If you get this right,
yeah.
we tie.
Could,
we tie.
Yeah.
This is a Tenga flip hole.
Oh, God. How do you spell it?
Tenga. T-E-N-G-A.
T-E-N-G-A. Tenga.
Tenga flip hole.
Flip hole?
Yeah, I'm confused by the flip hole. Like, how does a hole
flip?
They could be playing a trick on us with this one.
Yeah, they could be. And what's a Tenga? Is that a silly question? Should I know this?
I don't know. I've no idea what a Tenga is.
So we don't know what Tenga is, and you can't flip a hole.
Oh, I don't know. It sounds quite specific, so maybe it is real.
Yeah, I think I might go for real, just because. I don't know.
Yeah. Should we
because it sounds so fake that it has to be real.
should we say real?
I think let's go for real.
Okay, yeah. We are saying real. And I can tell you already, before the answer comes up, that it's true because I own one of these.
No, really?
Tenga is the brand.
Okay, fine.
And it's like a, you know what a fleshlight is?
I do.
And it's like one of those, but it opens up mm-hmm. and it's full of like this like jelly mold inside.
Right.
And it's incredible. It's one of my favourite toys.
Oh,
I use it all the time. There's a picture just here.
Oh, yeah. So the three, like, circle bits?
Those are for... So you place your fingers on those. And,
all
then,
right.
that, and then you can control
Grip.
The tightness of it.
Oh,
which you
fine.
Can't usually with a fleshlight.
Of course.
I actually did a sex toy review mm-hmm. on YouTube where I was sent this massive crate of toys by Love Honey. They sent me, like... 30 or 40 toys or something ridiculous.
Oh, wow.
And said, choose your favourites
yeah.
and make a video about those.
Yeah.
And this was in my top three. So
oh,
very
oh,
good,
40.
Very good toy.
It must be, yeah.
Very good. This sounds sponsored. It's not. It's
you can find them at.
So you can see how it opens up.
Oh,
and
it's a proper kit and it's got, let's have a look.
It's like an obstacle course for your penis, is what it is.
I like the name flip hole. I see that threw me off. I thought no, it must be real because that's too out there.
Did you like my acting? Me pretending
Very,
I had no
you know,
idea.
I was so impressed. Slightly worried now. What else you've been lying to me about, Callum? No,
been lying the entire yeah. show. The scores on the doors are Callum 3 and Sarah 2.
Right, I'm gonna come back and like regain my name back.
you have to come back on
my
the
rep.
Show now.
Yeah,
you
that's have it. To. This is it.
Right, that's enough sex toys. let's have some music. This yeah. is Brand New Youngblood, Parents.
I was born born in a messed up century. My favorite flavored sweets are raspberry amphetamines. I bought a Carberetta at age 16. I brush my teeth with a bleach cause I ain't got time for cavities. My daddy put a gun to my head, said if you kiss a boy I'm gonna shoot you dead. So I tied him up with gaffer tape and locked him in a shed. Then I went out to the garden and I fucked my best friend. Cause my head hopes to get low, because these people are so old. The way they think about it all, if I try I would never know. My head hopes to get low, but I know I'll never be alone. It's alright, we'll survive, cause parents ain't always right. Watch my mum and dad laugh. See a thousand bows go through the sun. They wish they never had. They told me casual affection leads to sexual infection. But it's hard to get an erection when you're so used to rejection. Yeah, the teacher fucked a preacher, but then he had to leave. I had to wash away the sins of a male cheerleader. Hi, nice to meet ya. Got nothing to believe in, so let me know when my breathing stops. Kiss my
Sarah, we're going to do sex confessions now.
Nice.
So thank you so much to everyone who has sent in their confessions. If you would like to send a confession for a future show, you can do that by emailing callum@fubarradio.com, and we keep it completely anonymous as well, so we're not going to, you know, tell people who you are, that we will be reading out exactly what you tell us. It's quite exciting to do this with you, Sarah, because it's your job to listen to people's confessions, I guess. It must be hard to keep that confidential all the time, you know. Like, I know that's like part of the job is to keep, you always have to be professional and not share that with anyone, but that must be quite tricky sometimes.
Do you know what, you'd think so, but when you work in a sexual health clinic, everyone there has a story to tell, and I think that's a takeaway message from something like the sex clinic, is that doesn't matter who you are, where you're from, you know, everyone's got in there for some sort of reason or you know, issue. So we're so used to hearing even information that we don't really need to know. But the minute someone feels comfortable, because I like to think that I'm quite approachable and
you're
I'm easy very, to talk to
very
as, a,
approachable
as a nurse kind of thing. So I find that a lot of my patients end up telling me loads more, especially with sex and relationships. You end up finding out, you know, how their husband, you know, they found their husband cheating, or, you know, their boyfriend and all these things. So you hear loads and loads of personal stories. Some are crazy, so some are like out there than others, you know, some are more exciting than others, but they all become so normal after a while when you do it.
They almost become uninteresting.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like, it's very hard for me to be like, oh my God, guess what happened at work today? Because I'm just like, I went to a fisting party and,
like, oh, another one.
Just another day at the office with me, pretty much. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I feel like you probably will have heard a lot of the confessions that have been sent in today, but let's go with it. Would you like to read any of these?
Yeah.
Do you want to read the first one?
Okay, so I'll read the first one. So the first one is, I brought a guy home and was about to have sex until he saw that I don't shave down below, and he refused to carry on and literally left my flat. Why is this such a big thing to people?
See, I really don't like this. I think that's so rude. Yeah. Like, I get that some people have certain preferences, but to just like go, no, I'm not doing it, and leave and bye, you know, like that's.
I find that really bizarre because I'm just thinking like in the you know the throes of things and like. That's the last thing you probably think about. And with most people, nobody really cares. And I think there is this thing of, oh, I have to be, you know, perfect down there. And it has to all look like super, like it does in the porn movies, which are completely not a realistic portrayal of real life. But that seems really dated from the guy for you to just leave based on that.
Yeah.
I just think that's, it's more a problem with him, I think. Maybe he has some sort of underlying issue because, yeah. I'm not sure why people are so funny about
him. I don't either. Like, I do have my preferences, I must admit. Like, if I could say my ideal, you know, I do have an idea of what I like. But for me, if I like somebody, I like them, and that's it. And, like, I could take off their body and find out they've got 12 nipples, and I'd be like, okay, cool, let's just go with it, you know. It could be anything.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, pubes, no pubes, whatever.
Yeah, it's not a deal breaker.
Yeah, well, I actually have I don't like chest hair. As a preference for me, I'm not a fan of it. But I've got with loads of guys with chest hair.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm just like, whatever, you know? I'm not going to leave.
No, exactly. And in answer to the question, I would say that's more of an issue with the guy as opposed to the person that, you know, that he walked out on. I think, generally speaking, most people, that wouldn't be a reason to just kind of get up and go.
No.
So I don't think it's a massive thing as he made it out to be. But I still think there are people, you know, a small minority of people who would think, okay, that's a massive deal breaker. But I just don't see what the issue is there.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't think this is going to happen again. I hope it doesn't. Just to absolutely clarify, there's nothing wrong with you. You're not in the wrong here. They shouldn't have done that. That's
and some people have heard it the other way around.
Yes, it's interesting, isn't it? Like, you can't win.
I think it does just come down to preference, but I just think it's weird if that can completely put you off somebody that you just get up and go.
How would you feel about, like, I think I would quite like it if I was like dating somebody, or even if it was just a hookup, and I spoke to them in advance. Like, if they just said to me, obviously with my consent and permission, if they just said, hey, just so you know, I like pubes or I don't like pubes or whatever, then I would be like, okay, well, I want to feel really hot and sexy for this person. Not that I should change my body, but
I would
be like...
No, but you want to feel your best and you want to make somebody else be attracted.
Yeah.
That's nothing wrong
so if they like it completely shaved, I would do that before a hookup or if I was dating somebody.
Yeah, if it's somebody you like
and
you know... Yeah.
So maybe people just need to communicate.
To have that conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no demands. Like, you shouldn't be going, shave it all off.
No. And if you don't want to and somebody's saying, well, you should definitely, then... I think just you can do better than that.
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure.
All right, let's do the next one. Fine. I'm a 23-year-old gay man and have just got my first boyfriend. We were getting close in the bedroom last week and I just couldn't get hard. We tried again the next night and the same thing happened. This is my first sexual experience with a guy, but I really, really like him and I don't understand why this is happening. It's very embarrassing. Well, I feel like you may have some better answers than I do for this.
Yeah.
But I just think that... There's a million reasons why this could be happening, but the pressure of it, if you're 23 years old and you're getting with a guy for the first time, there's so much pressure and expectation around that that could, you know, you could definitely be getting inside your head about it, and that could be what's stopping you from getting an erection.
I would definitely say that this is more of a psychological than a physiological thing.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything physically wrong with you in terms of if you can't, you know, get an erection. I think it just shows that you care, you know, it's your first time having it. Obviously, I would say at 23, I'm sure he's probably known he's been gay for a long time. So being this your first experience, it's natural to be a little bit nervous. Don't put yourself under any pressure. If he's really nice and, you know, and he wants to have sex and everything like that, then he will wait until you're ready. And just explain to him it's your first time. I think it's more nerves than anything.
Yeah.
And also, if he's 23, he's still quite young. There's not that, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's not that much there could be a lot more information and normalization of gay sex and things like that as well. So there could be an element of just maybe not knowing what to do, not knowing what he would like to do. And, you know, if you've never had... you know, sex before, you don't know what you should do. You know, you like, he might be like, should I top, should I bottom? Like, how does this, you know, how does it work? So it might just be nerves, anxious. It just shows that maybe he does really like this guy as well.
Yeah,
and it
absolutely.
Can happen in any kind of situation. But I think it's just practice. Keep trying.
keep trying.
I've had, I was just, as you were speaking then, I was just counting these off in my head. I've had five different instances of, of reasons why, like, why I've been unable to get an erection.
Right.
So the first one was taking medication, which affected it. Mm-hmm. Second, recreational drugs can affect it. Third was I was having group sex and I felt very nervous and I felt just a little bit intimidated, struggled then.
Yeah.
Fourth, trying to have anal sex, not really my thing, not really into it, was so turned off that I lost my erection. Yeah. And the fifth one, what was the fifth one? Well, I feel like that's a lot of reasons anyway. No, what was the fifth one? I had a fifth one. I can't even remember what it was.
Oh, man.
Completely gone. But I'm just trying to make the point that there are so many different reasons. Yeah. Oh, the fifth one was, it was a guy, the first time I got a blowjob from a guy with braces, and I just heard a story about somebody getting their foreskin caught in braces.
Yeah.
I was so scared that it just went
that
soft.
That will lose it, yeah.
But, you know, I'm just trying to illustrate that there are so many different reasons.
And
it's fine. It happens to absolutely everyone.
Absolutely everybody. And like you said, things like recreational drug use or alcohol. So if both times you've been in a situation where maybe you've gone on a date, you've had some alcohol and then you've not been able to get an erection, then that might be the reason. So maybe let go, you know, don't drink the next time you try.
Yeah.
Because I know that with guys with alcohol, it can affect their erection and stuff.
I've been with loads of guys when drunk and they just can't perform.
Yeah, exactly. So that's normal. So maybe try that as well. So try different things. But I've got a feeling being the first time, she's naturally going to be a little bit anxious, and I think that could just be it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think so too. Shall we do the next one?
Let's.
Would you like to read another one?
Yes.
Okay, this one is for you.
Okay. So, next question. I just moved house and my new housemate has been showing me all his sex toys. Is this you, Callum?
I think it might be me.
He is like a hoarder. BFFs already.
I love that. And I love that, you know, it's not, oh, I've got this new housemate moving in. I'm going to hide all my sex toys.
Stuff,
I'm going to give him a tour.
Yeah. This is where all the D-dolls are kept. This is where the lube.
No, I think that's amazing. And I think it's really important to feel comfortable with whether it's a friend, family member, but like housemate particularly,
especially because, someone you live with,
like especially when you like share a wall, like I shared walls with so many housemates, and you hear like absolutely, you can hear the vibrating noises, you can hear the screams, you know,
the bed against the wall.
So it's better that you're open and
unless you like look, you know, anything could go down. Just here's a heads up.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then if they don't want to move in. You know, there's the door.
Should that be something you do when you show somebody around and they're trying to make the decision?
Just FYI, I think if it's a massive part of your life and your, especially like with yourself, Callum, and everything you do, so, you know, you have loads of sex toys, you have a cupboard full of, you know, you can open a shop, we said, offline. If you live with somebody, it's going to be hard to hide all those toys, I think, if you're living with somebody, then I think. And it's nice to be able to have those conversations with your housemates, even if it's just, you know, small talk, but just so they're aware of what you do for a living, and that every now and again you just might find a dildo in the kitchen just randomly.
I just want everyone to talk about sex more, but and I think sometimes I can be a little, I know we touched upon it briefly earlier, but like sometimes I wish I knew what it felt like to feel a little bit more scared or not wanting to talk about because there are people like that, and I think that's okay as well.
I think that's the thing as well, is that not everybody's going to be comfortable talking about it, and you don't have to, but I think what we're trying to achieve with the show is that should you want to, you should feel like you're able to speak if you wanted to. You don't have to, but just having that option and knowing that if ever I have, and as human beings, you know, if you're sexually active, you're living in London or living wherever, sometimes you are going to get symptoms that may not be related to an STI. There's certain things that you can get just from having sex that are not sexually related, but having sex can trigger off certain things. Mm. So for instance, with women, things like thrush and bacteria vaginosis, having sex alone can trigger off BV. It's not an STI at all, but it just means that you're mixing bacteria with somebody else that your body's not used to. Yeah. So that alone can trigger symptoms. And if you're not familiar with that and you have, you know, maybe a funny smell or a niche or something like that, and you think, oh God, I don't know. Knowing that you're able to speak and that there are people, you know, sexual health clinic workers, or if you want to go to the sex shop and buy a toy, there are people there and you can feel comfortable and you know that those services are available.
I remember maybe about a year and a half ago, I found a lump on my perineum. So I went to the sexual health clinic about that, and it actually wasn't although it is like a sexual area of the body, yeah. It wasn't sexually related. And I think I just assumed that I must have got this from having sex with somebody and this is something that's caused it. But it wasn't. It's just, I guess, that part of the body ever so slightly malfunctioned for whatever reason. Yeah, that can happen for so many different
reasons.
There's
so many different things. And I think that's the thing. Any small thing that goes on down there, everyone's like, I've got an STI. and it's not, you know, half the time it isn't to do. People come in with people who have ingrown hairs and they're convinced that they've got God knows what. And they come in after months of having the ingrown hairs. And then you do examination and you're like, okay, all you have to do is stop shaving. And that's it. But the whole time they were like, I Googled it and I think I've got herpes, I've got HIV, I've got 2 weeks to live. Like, you've got an ingrown hair, just stop shaving and you'll be fine. But it's knowing that you can just go and talk to somebody, have that confidence to just be able to talk about it normally.
And people should as well, because I think there's a lot of like self-diagnosis online, which even I've been guilty of before.
Dr. Google.
Dr. Google.
Oh no. If you go online, and I think especially with HIV, it's one of those things that if you Google HIV symptoms, there's like loads. That's a whole different show we can go into, so I won't, Googling symptoms is the worst thing you could do, because there's nobody there to, you know, talk to you and explain to you in rational. So I get people coming in and they'll get their phones out
and they're like, this is what I have.
And then they'll show me, then I'm like, and I know exactly what, because I'm like, don't worry, we'll talk about it. But stay away from Dr. Google and don't self-diagnose.
Let's talk a little, we've only got a few more minutes left of the show. Let's talk a little bit more about you, because I know you have you're a nurse and you go on the TV and you did radio before and you also do fashion. Just like, how do you have the time for all of these projects?
I know, God knows where I go. I need an extra day in the week. That would be amazing. An eighth day would be perfect for me. But when I specialised in sexual health and HIV about 8 years ago is when I moved from the wards. I was in the wards for about 5 years, and then I moved in sexual health about 8 years ago. And after being in the wards for 5 years, I was in my early 20s still, so I was super young, and I was just kind of like, I just want to change. I still loved being a nurse, but I always wanted to work in fashion. But when I was like at school, college, university, we didn't have social media. There was no Instagram. Blogs were not a thing. There was no, literally, you just went to uni, you got a degree, got a job. And so when the whole social media stuff happened, and then, you know, you can, you know, build your own kind of platform, I started doing a little bit of blogging, a bit of modeling, and then I was like, okay, it's not really for me. I really want to be a stylist. I love dressing people. I love playing dress up. And I sort of pursued a career in that. After a few years, it kind of started to take off a bit. And then I sort of cut down a bit on the nursing. So I was still practicing as a sexual health nurse. But then I sort of grew my profile within the media and stuff, and working as a fashion editor. And then I sort of fell into radio for 4 years, doing like a fashion related show. And then, so when the sex clinic came up, everyone was like, oh, okay, it's because you do radio and you do all this other stuff, that's how you ended up in the sex clinic. And I was like, that was completely different. It was just coincidental that I was a nurse and started doing the show, but then equally doing media and stuff. So doing the balance has been, for me, I absolutely love it. I'm in clinic in Soho on a Monday and a Tuesday. Rest of the week I do my fashion editor stuff and like my presenting stuff and all, you know, my freelance jobs. It's a nice balance, and I get to speak to all my patients on a Monday and hear all the crazy stories, and then still get to be a creative as well. So
it's amazing.
Cool.
Yeah. And I mean, what an example of somebody who can pursue all of their passions at the same time. You know, we don't have to just choose one thing, you know? You can pursue everything and do everything.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you're doing an amazing job.
Thank you, Callum.
Where can people follow you if they want to?
Yes, so I am mainly on Instagram, I must say. So on Instagram, I'm at sarah.mulindwa, and on Twitter, I'm sarahmully54.
Very nice. Well, everybody should go and follow you. And thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolute superstar. I'm going to play you out with a little bit of Kim Petras. This is All I Do Is Cry.
Close my eyes, I think of all the lies.
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.